Hello and welcome to the U Sports Done Right podcast. My name is Dan Harrison. I'm coming to you live from headquarters again. Today, I'm sitting down with Leah Olson, and I'm really privileged to have someone who's been on the national scene with interviews and talking to people, so a little pressure on me today. So, Leah, a lot of people know who you are and may know your bio, but I think it's easiest, maybe you can share with who you are and who you are now.
Well, thank you, first of all, for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And so I'm a homegrown girl. I grew up in South Minneapolis, attended South High, went on to Minneapolis Community College, and then went over to the University of Minnesota and played for the Gophers. That was a long time ago, and then ever since then, I knew I wanted a career in sports. So I've worked with the Timberwolves and Lynx in broadcasting, as well as broadcasting the state boys and girls basketball tournaments, which is a ton of fun. And I've done some college sports and some national sports with ESPN as well. So it's sports has just been a passion of mine to play it, but to also work in it. And then it's also been fun to have my own kids go through at the U Sport level as well. So it's been a very large part of my life.
Well, I can't, if you say ESPN and you say all this, the national scene, who's the most enjoyable person you've worked with?
Wow. You know, it's interesting because a lot of the people who I've worked with are some of the top broadcasters in the country. You know, Michelle Tafoya and I have worked on many WNBA broadcasts together back in the day. Jay Billis worked on a bunch of broadcasts with him. Doris Burke, who is an NBA analyst now. So they're all fabulous. And through that, just to have interviewed, you know, a lot of amazing professional athletes, a lot of interesting people. But I really will say that some of my favorite interviews have been with young athletes, local athletes, and high school athletes, just because that's kind of where the passion for sports comes from, is playing at those younger ages. And so I've really enjoyed that piece of my work.
The first area I'd like to explore with you is a little bit about your playing career and just what kind of coaches did you have and what kind of things did you learn? You know, I was in athletics, and sometimes I learned from a coach in a good way, and sometimes I learned things that I might change. What are some things that you were able to pick up on that you thought, that's something that I'm going to really keep with me for my career?
Well, so I didn't start playing basketball until my junior year in high school at Minneapolis South. I went to a school that didn't have sports, but I was always playing sports. I have three brothers. I played in gym class. I played floor hockey. I played, you know, every sport you could play, but it wasn't on teams. And so I think one of the things that I think I'm grateful for is that I really learned to love the sports first, and then I started playing on teams. But in high school, my high school coach, his name was Gordy Halloran, and he was a really huge piece of not only teaching me the game, because he really had to teach me the game. I mean, he was teaching me the rules, how to, and he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And so he also taught me about how I could be a leader. He had expectations for his athletes that if you're an athlete, you should also be a leader in the school, which I didn't know that. And so he really showed me what that looked like. And one of the questions he would ask is, how do you want to impact the other kids in school? And when he first asked me that, I had no idea. And then he talked about how, as athletes, how you do have influence and how you can use that and how you can bring other kids in so they can be part of other events, or how you can go support other people in their endeavors, and all these things that I didn't know at all. So the first thing I think I learned from my high school coach was that there's so much more to be learned than just the sport. So he did teach me the sport, but he kind of taught me this whole leadership role, which I didn't really know I was going to get from him.
Well, I think that's one of the things that people miss in sports a lot of times. We talk about wins and losses and crazy parents and these kind of things. But the lessons you can learn in that leadership, and again, hearing him about an amazing coach is awesome. To hear him talk about teaching you more than just how to shoot a basketball, in addition to it, but
yes,
more than that.
Yeah, he did. He taught me both. And he really, and the one thing he said to me is, you have to have an open mindset, because I'm going to try to teach you a lot quickly, since I was behind. And so he's like, I need you to be really coachable. So I was really open to, like, if he suggested something, or if he wanted me to stay after, or if he, what he asked me to do, I always did it, because I did want to get better. And so I was driven in that way. At community college, I had a female coach. Her name is Diane Scoville, and she's been a big part of my life since then. And she was, you know, an intense coach. I learned a lot from her. She kind of taught me the nuances of the game, that because I was still new to it, ways that I could be better that I hadn't thought about, and kind of understanding the game a little bit more. So that was really important. And then she also saw that I could play at a higher level, and I wasn't sure because I didn't know how high it could be. So I was really thankful to have people who had a vision that was bigger than the vision I had for myself. And I think I always say to coaches is just be really aware of the words that you say to an athlete, because they will be remembered. And I still can remember both the negative and the positive words from my coaches because I wanted to please them so much. And so it's just a very, very powerful position.
Coaches can really do well to remember that influence you actually have. And I know for myself, it's helped me become much more thoughtful of the words I use, because you do find, especially when you see kids who come back 10 years later and they tell you something you said, you're like, I didn't even remember that.
They remember it. You really do. And it's impactful. I think most athletes want to please their coaches. And more than any other piece outside of parenting, I think more than teachers, coaches have like this kind of special place in our lives. And so, you know, just being really aware of that, I think is really important. It's a difficult, as we all know, it's an incredibly difficult job because there's so many different personalities involved with it. And from the coaches that I have met, talked to, and interviewed, so many of them talk about that it's that relationship building that is so critical and so important in getting your athletes to play at the highest level. Which is interesting because I always thought it was more about the strategy, and although strategy is important, athletes really won't fulfill the strategy unless they believe in you and they believe that you believe in them.
Yeah, I can see that. So it's interesting to me to talk to someone who's been around a lot of highly successful athletes and has been one yourself. I sometimes wonder, when we always say that kids don't have any chance to play, there's such a message of it's so hard to be at the next level, it's so hard to do those things. And I think I'll ask it in two parts. It'd be interesting to hear you talk about all the work you did to get to that next level, because I sometimes think it's not so much that you can't play at the next level, maybe it's junior college, maybe it's division 3, 2, 1, whatever. But I think a lot of times people underestimate the amount of work it takes to actually do it. And so that most often it's a choice to say, I'm not willing to invest that much time to get better.
I agree with that for the most part. I mean, I think there is, you do have to have certain traits. You have to have the right body. You have to have a certain amount of athleticism. There's some things that you basically need to be a good athlete, to be a great athlete. But yes, the separation for most of us is what we're willing to put into it. I know when I look back at my career, I could have put a whole lot more into it than I did, but I kind of maxed out where I wanted to still have a life outside of sports. When you play at the Division I level, when I played for the Gophers, your time is so limited that the great, great athletes are taking that limited time and they're going back into the gym and they're playing more and more and more, and they're trying to learn how to be better, and they're looking at film, and they're reading, they're watching film, they're just doing all these extra things. Everyone else is going to do something else, and I was included in that. I wanted some space from basketball. So that was one of the reasons why I didn't play at another level, right? And so all of us will level out at some point. But when I'm talking to young athletes, I agree with you that I'm not here ever to dash anyone's dreams. If your hope is to play somewhere in college, Division I, II, or III, I'm just going to try to help you succeed at that goal. You might not get there, but I think everyone should have the opportunity to have that dream. What I like to do with athletes is let them see the big picture, is that you can be a great athlete and a great student and a great person all at the same time. So just be thoughtful of the process that you're going through. And if you're just trying to be a great athlete, that's going to be a difficult road.
Yeah, I love the way the process part you said there. I think that many times when I talk with young athletes, I try to help them draw out their dream and say, if you want to be this, okay, here's what it's going to take to get there. Now that's the actual question is, are you willing to study the extra film? Are you willing to forego maybe some extra studying at school, or foregoing going out with your friends or other relationships to say, I have to put extra time in there?
Yeah. Are you willing to change your diet? Are you willing to get the right amount of rest that your body needs to be successful? So that might mean like, no, I'm not going out with friends. No, I'm not doing things that are fun because your body needs to recuperate. And I think that's one piece that youth athletes miss a lot, is that your body needs rest time. And everyone's so fearful of doing that because they're fearful of falling behind. But you're actually putting your body into a deficit when you do that. So there's a lot of little things that we can do as athletes. That's where you're driven inside. That's how we separate out from each other, right? Is I wasn't willing to do that at that next level, and plenty of other people were. But it was my decision. Like, it wasn't a parent pushing me. It wasn't a coach. It was like I kind of realized this is what I want to get from the sport. And I think that's important for us to let our athletes figure that out.
With you developing a process, I think it's interesting, and I'd like your take on this, is that you have figured out a process through sports, and it sounds like you made a decision of yours, but that process has probably paid off in life even more.
Yes. So my biggest story for that, for process, is I went from community college, Minneapolis Community College, and then I walked on to the University of Minnesota. And so going from the community college level to Division I is a huge leap. That process for me was really intense and difficult because I had to, what I realized for me to make it at the Division I level is I had to work harder than everybody else every day. So that was really true. When I got to the University of Minnesota, those players had, you know, those are the best of the best, and they had, they're all Miss Minnesotas, and they've played for so long. And so for me to stay on the court with them, I had to come in earlier. I had to work harder throughout practice, and I had to make sure I was lifting weights and doing things that would allow me to play with them. And so that was the process for me, was every single day realizing you have to outwork people here, otherwise you're not going to get on the court. My senior year, I did finally break into the starting lineup and I became a captain. And that was just from learning the process of understanding, for me to succeed in this, you know, I'm not as gifted as some of these athletes and they've played a lot longer than me. I'm going to need to work incredibly hard every single day.
So with your professional experience now, talk a little bit about how you see that. It's probably the same. You're in a hyper-competitive market with journalism, mm-hmm. I think is what you'd call it.
Yep.
And you talk about some names people recognize, and you're obviously recognized. But I'm sure it's similar there too, isn't it? Those people who are ultra successful there are crazy involved.
Yeah, and that's what I like about sports. And one of the things that I do in my work when I speak to athletes is showing them how to transition the skills you've learned in sports and using it into the rest of your life, because the skills are so valuable. And so for me, not only when I moved into sports broadcasting, there wasn't a lot of women in sports broadcasting. When I first started with the Timberwolves, I was the only female and usually an all-male environment. If I was going into the locker room, if I was at a practice, I would be the only female. And so what I understood in that was I might need to work a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. I might need to show up and make clear to people that I understand this game and know it. And those were skills that I had learned through playing sports. And yes, it's like anything. If you want to be a great broadcaster, you're going to need to get as much experience under your belt as possible. And you're going to need to watch as much as you can and learn as much as you can. And so it's all the same stuff. It's just now we're in the workforce. And that's why I think, you know, why so many of us believe so much in youth sports is because if done correctly, it can be such a valuable asset to our kids later on in life, yet it's really fun to do. And so it's a way to bring like really cool, great life lessons in a really fun package. But I have to kind of emphasize it does need to be done correctly. It's not just a given that if you play sports that you'll get that.
Well, I think we'll kind of turn down that path a little bit now. And I think the way you just said that is so insightful and so guiding. I think if parents could look at it from that 30,000 foot view of saying these aren't skills about shooting, you succeeded at a level that most people won't be willing to or able to in athletics, but even with that being said, you've used those skills for something additional. So you weren't just taught to be good at a pivot move or defense or rebounding. It was a work ethic. How do I set a plan? How do I understand what I have to do to get to the next level in the rest of your life?
Yeah, a couple spaces that I felt like sports really helped me from the college experience was time management. You know, when you play Division I sports, your time is completely booked all day long. And so if you veer off of that, or if you don't study in your little window that you're supposed to be studying, it throws everything off. And so I really realized how important that was going to be to manage my time. And so as soon as I graduated and I got the job, I just did the same thing there. It was like, okay, now I have to, I'm going to be working this much. And then I still want to work out. I still want family time, but I also want to get better at my career. So how can I fit all those things in? So that time management piece was completely learned from sports. It was one of the reasons one of my employers told me that I was hired, is because they knew I had that experience in sports, is why athletes are sometimes hired in jobs in front of other people. So that's where the sport can become really valuable. But then also in learning the team concept, is when you're on a team, when you play in team sports, you learn that you don't have to love all your teammates, but you have to learn how to work with them, and you have to know what they bring so you can serve each other and you can, you know, play at a higher level together. And so I learned that in sports, and I learned, like, okay, during a game, you can't say that to her during a game because that will throw her off. And other people, you can get in their face and say something. And so you kind of learn how everyone works together. So then when I started working in the front offices of the Timberwolves, I realized, oh, you need to understand the different departments and how people work, and you have to respect what's going on in accounting if you want to get a check out of there to pay someone that, you know, all these things work together.
Yeah.
And so it was cool for me to understand, like, oh yeah, it's just the same thing as I did on the team, is I need to figure out how to work with everyone here too.
Yeah, that relatedness piece of the humanity is such a good lesson that teams, and sometimes I think it's even undertaught, if it's not focused on. A great teammate is somebody who you'd love to have around. So you have kids.
Yep.
I think they're grown now.
Yeah, they're in college.
They're in college. Poor you.
Empty
nester. And lucky you.
Yeah.
You are a coach as well as a parent. And I think there's some interesting things you maybe can talk about there when you say about doing it right. I would guess you were hyper competitive because you were an athlete. How did you figure out a way to work that into being a coach of athletes that were, I assume you coached youth athletics,
yes,
right? How did you transition to that? What did you learn? What could you share?
I think for me, well, I was coaching boys, so I was coaching my son's basketball team, and it was middle school, and then when he was in high school, it was park board. And one, I had to kind of learn how to relate to them, what would make them interested in learning this game, or so kind of figuring out ways not only to make it fun, but so they would get it, because right, I'm coming off of, you know, knowing it from a higher level, yet I have to get them to know it at a different level in a way that they're going to get it. So that challenged me a bit. And then also when I was coaching my son, so he was very sensitive to me being his mom and how that was going to show up for him. So I had that conversation with him first and foremost, is, you know, how do you want me to show up for this? Are you okay if I make jokes about us being, you know, mother, son, or do you want me just to not talk about that a lot? And he really told me, you know, so he didn't love a lot of yelling and he didn't respond well to that. And that wasn't my style anyways, but I needed to kind of know how he needed me to show up in that space, because I was coaching for him, but I was also coaching the team as well. So I felt like I learned a lot how to be with these young boys and how I could get them to respond to me.
Was there a lot of pressure on him, do you think, because you were successful at sports, you know, living in the shadow?
You know, I didn't feel that as much, except for that, because I think maybe if I would have been the dad, the super successful dad, I think he may have gotten a little bit more of that, like, I want to be just like my dad. But because I was the mom and I was in sports broadcasting, I think it relieved some of that pressure from him. But I will say this, I think there was also a need that he wanted to play really well for me. He, you know, he was just the type of athlete that you didn't have to, he worked extremely hard and he was very hard on himself. So it wasn't an athlete who you would want to kind of poke at anyways, because he was already doing that to himself, you know. And I think that's one of the things you learn as coaches, is that we all are a little bit different in that way. And so how do you handle each individual player?
So as a mom coach, And a star athlete before, any car ride stories? Did you automatically understand how to keep the car ride positive?
I wouldn't say I automatically understood it. I understood that if we lost a game or if he didn't play well, I could feel his frustration in the car. So I certainly wasn't going to add on to that. But then I did, you know, the the best part of losing is that you can learn from it. So I did want us to learn from whatever the mistakes were in that game. So the car ride was more, I would try to get him to talk about, hey, what did you think? Anything you thought we should do differently, to see if he would give me that. And then I would wait to implement or change anything at the next practice, just to kind of let the car ride be the cooling off period.
I wish everybody could figure that out, including myself, years back, if you can be retrospective. Hard. When you have access and you see all these other coaches, how did that feed into it? What maybe when you put it into practice yourself, obviously you knew basketball at that point well. What did you say, oh, wow, you know, this is a little different than when I played?
I think that every athlete comes with a different expectation and a different level of how much they want to give, how much they want to learn, how serious they are in practice, what they take. And so, you know, when you're coming in and you've worked hard at putting a game plan together and you're trying to run in practice, and then you see people like goofing off and doing different things, you're thinking, oh, okay, what am I missing here? How come I can't get these kids motivated, or what's... And so I think a lot of it was kind of realizing the level of kids that you have, how serious they are in taking it, how much you want to really kind of bring my competitive nature into them, because I did want to share that with them without overwhelming them. And so the coaching piece, it's a really difficult job. I think it's hard to motivate 12, 15 kids all at once. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different things going on with so many different kids and their families. And that all kind of lands with you in practice that you get for, you know, hour and 20 minutes. So the biggest thing for me was always like, if I can keep it fun, they'll come back, because they'll want to come back to that space. So I did a lot of talking and calling other coaches. How do you make this drill fun? How can I make this thing work? How can I still make basketball something that is exciting to go to?
When you look at coaches, especially new coaches, don't recognize or expect, and sometimes don't even have the preparation for, is that understanding that you really are a psychologist. And like you said, the relationships matter. And most people will put the time in to say, how do I teach dribbling? How do I run flex offense? But being able to reach out to those kids, again, back to your point of saying you remember the things your coaches say, that's probably a lot more than saying you may not even remember what a coach taught for an offense, right?
Absolutely. And it's interesting because it just popped into my head. One of the young boys on our team his dad was a super disciplinarian, just really hard on him. And so I realized that when I tried to push him, he had this real negative reaction. So I needed to figure out a different way to, because he was good, I needed to figure out a different way to motivate him rather than just coming straight at him, where, you know, some players you can do that with, and he was not, because that triggered something else for him. And so it's these little ways of like, how can I get the best out of that player without causing an issue, you know, with him storming off the court or whatever it may be. So yes, it is. It's, you know, you need to be a psychologist and you need to know the sport and you need to relate well to parents. And so there's a lot happening there for coaches.
So when you sit back and think about your youth coaching, what kind of advice do you give? I mean, I'm sure you've watched, we were talking about doing youth sports right, and obviously that's really the name of our podcast, so mm-hmm. That's what we're all about. You see coaches losing it out there. What kind of, I don't even think it's advice, but what kind of observations do you have of that? And what do you think we could do, or they could even do, to get a handle on it themselves?
I think just for everyone, we have to put it in perspective. And, you know, it's the reason, you know, I started my nonprofit, Rethink the Win. So Rethink the Win is really asking people to, like, think about the win, like how important it is to win that game, or, you know, think about a bigger perspective of it. Oh, good, my kid's being active, they're playing sports, they're on a team, they're surrounded by good people, you know. So my first thing usually to coaches and parents is just step back a second, because usually you're zeroed in too closely, mm-hmm. and you're thinking that it matters so much if we win this game,
right.
And it, in actuality, it doesn't. But there is some stuff that does matter. Did we learn something from this game? Did we work hard? What happened? What broke down? Just the basic piece of like why we're playing. And so the first thing I would always say is just step back from it and relax a little bit, because I think that's where we all get caught, is we, you know, everyone likes to win. And in hindsight, when you look back at it, you're like, oh, did we really have to win that game on Tuesday night against the third graders? And, you know, no, you really didn't.
That perspective is a big deal.
It is.
Saying, how do you get not so myopic that you're looking at this basket versus saying 10 years from now, what is this going to teach? So as a parent, did you coach all your son's sports, or did you have a chance to observe him?
Mm-hmm.
So how did that feel watching? Were you competitive there too, or were you able to draw it back a little bit?
Well, I loved that he played baseball, because baseball is a sport I didn't know in the way that I know basketball. Mm-hmm. So I could sit there and watch him play center field and not have any stress, and I could really enjoy him playing baseball more so than basketball. But what I did when I wasn't coaching him in basketball was when I would ask him before every season, are you okay? Like if I yell or scream, but in positive ways. I would never scream negative things. I think parents shouldn't yell negative things at their kids or other kids. I don't know, common sense. But so he asked me not to yell at all, because he said, you know, my voice was so influential to him that when he heard mm-hmm. it kind of usurped the coach's voice. And so he was like, if you could not yell, it would be easier for me to focus on my coach. And I really respected that he was able to tell me that. So for me to be able to do that, I had to take the book at the game, because that way I knew I wasn't going to be yelling. So I was like, because this was his experience. It's not mine. I wanted him to have a good basketball experience. I had mine. So I wanted to show up so it would work for him. So that's what I did. And then in baseball, it was easy for me. But then the other thing in baseball was we had a really great coaches who set a tone at the start and let us know as parents that it wasn't going to be acceptable that we yelled and screamed and that you wouldn't be welcome back on the team. And I thought that was great, because then we all just sat there, enjoyed the game, and went home, and it was perfect.
Well, I think a recurring thing that you've mentioned a few times that I want to echo or at least point out is the fact how you talked with your son. And I think it's so important for parents to really understand what their child's goals are.
Yeah.
And why are we doing this together, and actually talk, you know, I'm on my third son who's a high school student, and we're doing some things now that I should have done all along, with sitting down and talking about process and talking about, you know, we're reading the book Pound the Stone.
Cool.
Together. And it's just interesting to think, you know, sometimes I know we look at athletes and they're really good, and you just assume that they're competent to everything. And when you start talking to them, you recognize they're kids still.
Mm-hmm.
I did a thing with some young men where we call it hacks and homework. So we do batting cage work, but they had to do their homework first. And you sit down and listen to them talk about algebra, and you're like, you're just a kid.
Right.
And yet they can hit a ball great. They can throw it well. So you think, well, we can talk like this. And
yeah.
I think it's interesting to hear you share that with your son.
Yeah, and when my daughter played volleyball, she was definitely in it more for the social aspect of it. And so I respected that. That's how she wanted to show up for sports. So she played volleyball and had all these great friends, had a great schedule, did all these positive things. And then in her junior year of high school, when she decided she didn't want to play anymore, she became the manager of the team, because she wanted to stay in that group. She wanted to keep the schedule. She wanted to help the other athletes. And to me, so that proved to me that she had learned the lessons from sports, that I want to use that. I'm done playing, but I still want to use the, you know, the feeling of being with a team and their schedule and being around positive people. And so there's so many different ways that you can use sports to help your kids grow. And they don't have to be the star athlete, and they don't have to be on the A team. They can garner it from any parts of sports. But I think we as parents have to respect that too.
That social connectedness, I always try to tell my team, lately I don't cut players, and sometimes I have players who aren't capable necessarily of competing at that level. But we always talk about, we're all going to end up being bench players eventually, right? Even someone like yourself, you sit courtside, but you're not playing.
Nope.
But that connectedness, I'm sure you probably still miss that locker room feel or that team connectedness.
And that's why I wanted to work in sports, is because I wanted to be around it. And I like the cycle of sports. I like the thought of like being around it, starting, getting ready for a game, working hard for the game happening, whatever the outcome is, you move on and then you start again. So there's something about that really works for me. And so that was, when I was graduating from college, my number one piece was, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to stay in sports. And I've been in sports my entire career. So, but there is just something very alluring about watching athletes come together. Because I've worked with the Minnesota Lynx, I've seen up close what championship right. teams look like. And it's really cool. Like you see, it's these little things that they're working on that helps make them champions. And it's really cool to see up close.
Was that culture championship culture? I'm sure I know the answer, but...
Yeah. What was some of the cool things that I saw up close was, one, the willingness for players to give things up for other players. So mm-hmm. when Maya Moore first came to the Lynx, Simone Augustus was the star player, but she wasn't winning any championships. So Simone had to make space, give up scoring points, give up some of her, you know, it was going to become Maya's team. Simone had to be willing to give that up for Maya, for them to become a championship team. Lindsay Whalen did the same thing. And so they all understood there's some give and take here. It's not just about me. So that was cool to see up close. And then I think also the process, which we've talked a little bit about, is that the goal is just these small little goals each and every day. So we have to, coming off screens, we have to do it better than anybody. So you're just working on screens all day in practices and coming off tightly and all these things that you have to do. And then you win that practice and then you win that day. And then you keep building up to this, hopefully what is going to be a championship. But it's never about like, during the months of the season and through practices, they don't really talk about like we're going to be a championship team, because they know we just got to work on this process to get us there. And I think that's helpful too, like in a job or a career, like sometimes the mundane days or the things that you don't want to do at work or the monotony of work. But if you keep doing that and you work hard at that, it can build up to, you know, being more successful at work, you know? So it's just, those aren't the exciting times for athletes, but it's the most important stuff.
What I hear you saying there is that detail level of how intense they're measuring, that detail that they're focusing on. I think sometimes if we focused as parents and coaches on building that sense of community and then really drilling it down to that level of, like you said, working for extended periods on a skill such as just coming off a screen, whereas a lot of people are going to try to do that in 2 minutes,
right?
The best teams are going to say, hey, we have to have this
the
perfect.
Best. Yeah, and I think like the greatest athletes like Amaya Moore knows, if I'm going to like be the best at this, I come off the screens faster than anyone, I release a shot faster than anyone, but in these little details that no one else is thinking about is what puts her at such an elite level. And I think the last piece on what I saw with championship teams was the relationships, is like that Coach Reeve did this great job of building relationships with her players that were real and authentic. So when she asked them to push themselves to that next level, they were willing to do it.
So if we talked a little bit to parents, then, you know, with your foundation, talk a little bit about, if I gave you a magic wand and you said, I can just make this happen, how would you lay it out? How would you make it so that sports were better serving the needs of people?
Well, I think my first thing would be just try to remember that it's, if we can't let our athletes fall in love with the game first, it's going to be really hard for them to dedicate themselves to it and to work all year long and to play all year long the same sport, which so many people are doing, if you don't first learn to love the game. And how do you learn to love the game? You go out and play with your brothers, you play in the park, you want to get out to that game however you can. And every great athlete has told me this, that they first had to fall in love with the game. So I think we're just trying to put our kids into a system and try to turn them into that without allowing them to find a game, find something they love, and then seeing if they're willing to work harder towards it. So I think that would be my first thing, is just let them find that for themselves. And that we as parents then get to guide them and like drive them and pay for them to do these things, right? But it doesn't work as well when we're trying to jam them into it. Like, this is where you're going to be successful. And I think what's so hard and why I like to help parents navigate the youth sports system is it's confusing. It's difficult. There is no real guidelines. The gut reaction we all have with our kids is we want our kids to be successful. And so we're thinking that we have to push them, they have to practice all the time, they have to play all the time to be successful. And that has not been traditionally the way that we have gotten great athletes in the past. So, in the past, it's like letting kids have fun, letting them figure out what they're good at, letting them play other sports. And then, you know, right around 13, that age range is when they start the focus. And if they're that driven athlete, then they'll go down that line.
So I suppose it makes sense to think all the successful athletes you've been around, they aren't really being pushed. It's intrinsic. They love it. They're after it.
It is. Once you realize, you know, the great athletes, it's them driving themselves. And, you know, like I just interviewed Jason Zucker from The Wild, mm-hmm. and he is, you know, really clearly said, like, no, I would never play hockey year round when I was a kid. He goes, otherwise I wouldn't love it. And, you know, he goes, as a professional, I have to. But as a kid in the off season, he would rollerblade because he was like, it was fun. We could create our own stuff. It was exercise. We were being active, but it was on our own terms. We didn't have coaches barking at us. And he's like, that's where you learn to do different and fun things. So I think as parents, we have to trust that our kids can step away from the sport, go play in the field, go play wherever, and just really enjoy the game. And that's actually where great athletes are born.
I know that when I meet people, I kind of have a sort of a look that I see in them. You look in their eyes and you can see that burning intensity. And it could be a musician, it could be any field. And I think that's something you probably notice in those. I notice it in your eyes. And yeah. I see that in a lot of people where it's just this fire that says, I'm alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what separates us all out is how much do we love it and how much are we willing to give it. You know, when I was in college and you're practicing 3 hours a day plus an hour and a half of weights and then an hour of like video downtime looking at film and all of that, you start really asking yourself, how much do I love this game? That's, again, where you start seeing people selecting, like, okay, I don't love it this much.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's probably part of the art as a coach or parent, too, is recognizing when your son or daughter needs a little time away, when they just need that, you're doing fine. And
right.
A little encouragement to keep going, and that's probably what makes it an art over a science.
Yeah, it really is. There is no science to it. And I think the other piece that I always say to parents is that, you know, it's a huge industry, you know, we've talked about it, it's a $16 billion industry, youth sports. And so just because someone says there's a tournament your son or daughter should play at, doesn't mean that it's you should, doesn't mean that it's going to help their career, it doesn't mean that it's going to serve them in any other way than it's a tournament that's going to make money for some group. And so we have to look at it from a bigger view, is that what does my athlete need? And do I really need to invest in all of these extra things? Those are really tough decisions, because when other parents are doing it, you don't want to feel left out. And that's what I think is driving parents just to keep, you know, getting more and more and more. So it's always good to stop, take a look back, and then talk to your athlete. Ask them what they want from the game. And that might help you make some of those decisions.
Yeah, that comparative thing
it's
in
hard.
Our society is really hard,
it's hard
on every level. But I know as a parent, it is. You look around, and I've heard other parents say, well, we have to have traveling at as low as third grade because so-and-so does, or we don't want our kids falling behind. And I don't know if there's a barometer out there that you can use other than, like you said, it probably is the best barometer to say, what's your goal?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think some of that, what I'm hearing from parents is the only reason they're doing traveling is because the friend group is doing traveling. And if you don't do traveling, then you're not with the friend group. So it's not so much that it's this drive to be a great athlete. It's like everyone else is doing it. So I'm feeling like I don't want my kid to be sitting home alone. So that, to me, that tells me we need better options for our athletes. We need teams that travel. And if that's the goal of the athlete, that you want to spend a lot of time traveling the country with your athlete, then you should have that opportunity. And then there should be really good leagues that are just stay-home leagues that can play good competition, right? So it gives athletes the options and parents the options. I guarantee you both will create good people, good athletes, and there's no magic thing in traveling around the country. I mean, my kids, when we did traveling, we often would play Minnesota teams in a Phoenix tournament. So it wasn't so we just paid a lot of money to go play a Minnesota team. So traveling has this mystique around it that, like, you'll become this great athlete if you do that. It's really not based on any evidence that that's going to make a better athlete or not.
Just spending some extra
money. Yeah, we spent a lot of money, our family did,
I think a lot of families maybe would have almost a full scholarship if they
right.
just stayed home.
right. Yeah, and I think for all of us, though, like, I think the only things that I think are just what you can't do, which I think is super obvious, is, like, you have to show up to be right at games, like yelling at officials or yelling at coaches or kids, we've normalized it, and it shouldn't be normalized. Like, it should be something that your team sets a standard on, that we won't do it. But besides that, I think for most of us, it's like, if we can just go and enjoy the sport, there is nothing like watching your kids play sports. I think it's really fun.
Well, I would like to ask you just a little bit about you now. Again, we'll finish up here, a couple of things. You've been in this a long time. You've seen a lot of people. What do you do to keep your saw sharp, as they say? How do you stay? Because there's got to be, I mean, you're energetic today, you're on, and I'm sure you're on a lot of the time, but there's got to be days where it's like, I'm human.
Yes.
And how do you get away from it, or how do you rebound from it?
So from the sports overall, or sports broadcasting, or
whatever, what keeps me fresh? Mm-hmm. How do I stay on the edge, as they say?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for me is finding the time and space to do the things that I wanted, that I really, really want to do for downtime. Like, I am a person that needs, after being at a big game or doing a big broadcast, that I need some downtime. I love to go home. I am a Netflix binger. I'm going to find some good shows. My husband and I do a lot of that. But that's like a fun, easy space for us to be in. It kind of helps me regroup. I love sports and I love talking it. And sometimes I just have to step away from it. And there's a lot of other things out in the world that interest me. And so sometimes it'll just be, we'll do a trip, we'll do a museum, we'll do something other just to take in. There's a lot of other stuff out there outside of sports. And so that's kind of what I do. But then I am excited. I am naturally driven towards sports. So I am excited to get back into it. But I do like to step away and just have some downtime.
Cool. Are you a reader, a podcaster, or something else, or none of the above?
Yes, I'm both. I do podcasts in my car.
Okay.
I figured 20, 25 minutes everywhere I'm going, I'd like to get a podcast in. I do different kinds of podcasts. I do some sports. I do some funny ones because I love laughing. And I do, like, I am a big, like, Oprah, how to be a better person type. Yeah. So I do a lot of that self-helpy stuff too.
Well, I would be remiss in my duties as a podcaster to talk to somebody who's a professional as yourself and say, what question haven't I asked you that if you were sitting over here, you would ask you?
Let's see here. Maybe I would ask what's the biggest thing that I've gained from being in sports?
So now that you're interviewing yourself, can you answer the question?
All right. I would say the biggest thing that I gained from sports was when I first started playing in high school and felt like I was part of the high school. I loved putting on the South High jacket. I loved the days where we wore our jerseys to school. I felt so much part of the community, and that was the first time I really felt that. That had a huge impact on me. And also that helped me gain my confidence. You know, I was the 6'1", 12-year-old girl who was always standing out when she wanted to fit in. And so sports gave me that confidence to walk tall. And so I'm so thankful just for those two things, that it brought me community and it gave me my confidence.
I think those are two things that we can take away from this podcast, that everybody should really make a big part of their focus in sports, is saying that's an irreplaceable thing. So
yeah, I think so too.
Well, I appreciate you being out here today. I appreciate you traveling here. I appreciate all your experiences. It's amazing. I think these kind of things really give people different views, and they can kind of digest them, and hopefully we can start to help youth sports be done right. Is there anything you'd like to talk about your foundation?
I would just say that if you're looking for some resources, you can check Rethink the Win. I also have a podcast called Youth Sports Intervention. And really all I'm trying to do is provide content that will help serve parents, athletes, and coaches. I would like to see us have a better positive experience for our athletes, because I think they deserve it. And so I'm trying to help parents and coaches navigate that field. But one of the things I love doing the best from my foundation is I get to work with athletes, young athletes, a lot. So I'll go in, I've created a guidebook that helps athletes be able to articulate why sports are going to help serve them later in life. And it's been really cool seeing their reactions and seeing athletes kind of step into their power a little bit. So that's probably my favorite part.
That is, it's so fun to hear. And even more, hopefully they can feel it through the microphone. It's one of the things, I always come from the perspective that I believe parents are smart. I'm a fan of parents.
Me too.
I feel like a lot of them just haven't gotten the information they need to understand how to do this the best they can. And I kind of feel like our silent majority can then take back those courts, take back the conduct, because they're educated and they understand the big picture. So
yeah, I appreciate that. And I think we as parents all have the best intentions, and sometimes we love them too much and we act crazy, but we all have the best intentions for our kids.
Well, I appreciate you coming out again. Thank you so much. I hope you have an amazing season. We'll be watching you, looking for you on TV, listening
Thank
in
you.
And checking out your foundation.
Yeah, and thanks for doing this podcast. What a great resource for people.
Yeah, thank you.